The Baseball Tonight podcast is presented by LinkedIn Jobs.
Way out of here. Oh,
goodness. This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, June 10th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. And guess what, Taylor? Today we're going to get some answers about bears. We've been talking about it all week after a bear invaded your neighborhood and took out your trash can.
This has been the hot subject. I mean, we had a Bleacher Tweeter complaining, is this the Foreign Substance podcast? No, this is the bear podcast. And we're going to get down to business today with this special guest. Do you want to do the honors, Buster, please?
Yeah. So this is an expert, someone who's in the woods all the time. My little brother, Sam Lincoln, who is a logger. And he certainly is aware, you know, working in the woods of Vermont, how to respond when you see a bear. I am so looking forward to this conversation and have been critiquing Taylor's approach of taking a snow shovel outside. All right. All eyes yesterday were on the game in Minnesota between the Twins and the Yankees. The first meeting between Josh Donaldson and Gerrit Cole, since what Josh Donaldson said last week about Gerrit Cole's spin rate and Gerrit Cole's pregnant pause. Before yesterday's game, Josh Donaldson spoke with about 30 reporters and he was asked, do you regret your comments about Cole?
No, I don't regret anything that I've said. I mean, first off, when I say something, it's been thought through before. It's not just something on a whim. I would say this. With Gerrit Cole, he was the first guy to pitch since the suspensions had happened, and he's the first guy that you could see spin rates going down. Since that, we're going off an interview that was done, 4 or 5 days ago. There's been 12 or more guys already whose spin rates have magically dropped in the last week. So it's not just Gerrit Cole. First off, I want to get that out.
So the game started. Josh Donaldson batted second for the Minnesota Twins, and in the bottom of the first inning, he struck out on a slider. Josh Donaldson just put his head down, went back to the dugout. Gerrit Cole Taylor, I think you would agree with me, he kind of stared down Josh Donaldson at home plate.
Little bit. I kind of liked it. Gerrit Cole's an interesting dude, and I appreciate that he was trying to send a message there. Very interesting.
Exactly. Here was Josh Donaldson's next plate appearance in the bottom of the third.
Well, everyone, you know, always says the right political thing to say, but, just think of yourself. Wouldn't you want to get out Donaldson after all that happened, please? Mm-hmm. Now, here's the 2-2. And the pitch cut on him, missed high fastball out of the strike zone. So Donaldson strikes out for the second time.
Yep. Last night, Gerrit Cole won that matchup. He wound up allowing 2 runs in 6 innings. That was John Sterling on WFAN. Giancarlo Stanton put the game out of reach in the top of the 5th inning.
Stanton powers that to right field and deep. He has another. Giancarlo Stanton with home run number 2 on the night. A 2-run shot. And the Yankees lead is 7-1.
Ryan Rucco on the YES Network with that call. After the Yankees 9-6 win, Gerrit Cole spoke with reporters about that stare down.
You know, he's a former MVP, big cog in the lineup, two-hole important spot for us to, you know, really try to attack and, you know, keep neutralized if we want to keep runs off the board. So, you know, just the satisfaction of executing those pitches in that spot, put our team in a better position to win, was enough.
Giancarlo Stanton spoke to reporters after the game, and he was asked about the plan to have umpires enforce the foreign substance rule. We don't have sound of that. I don't know if it was actually permitted by the Yankees, but the quote from Stanton was, I think the balance for me is to have everyone on an even playing field. That's with nothing added to performing enhanced. So Stanton, like Josh Donaldson, believes there should not be these foreign substances used by pitchers. Pete Alonso of the Mets had some stuff to say about baseball manipulation by Major League Baseball. Here's Alonso being asked if MLB is doing the right thing, cracking down on sticky stuff.
Oh, absolutely not. I don't think so, because for me, I think that since the start of the game, pitchers have been using substances. I mean, there's a bag of rosin behind the mound right now to help guys dry their hands and get grip. For me, I think whether they're using pine tar, rosin, bullfrog, or sunscreen and rosin, or whatever they want to use to help control the ball, let them use it. Because for me, it's like I go in the box every single day and I see guys throwing harder and harder every day. And I don't want 99 slipping out of someone's hand because they didn't have enough feel for it. I think that the biggest concern is that Major League Baseball manipulates the baseballs year in and year out, depending on the free agency class or guys being in an advanced part of their arbitration. So I do think that's a big issue, the ball being different every single year.
So that was interesting. He certainly took it in a different direction. And after saying that, he doubled down on his previous statement.
Oh, no, that's a fact. I mean, guys have talked about it, but I mean, in 2019, there's a huge class of free agent pitchers. And then that's quote unquote, the juice balls. And then 2020 was a strange year with the COVID season. But now that we're back to playing a regular season with a ton of shortstops or position players that are going to be paid a lot of money, like high caliber players. It's not a coincidence. And I think that it definitely is something that they do.
So I'll be talking with Ken Davidoff of the New York Post about that. I've got two very distinct thoughts. Some other notes, the Hall of Fame ceremony has been moved to September 8th, the class of 2020. Derek Jeter, Marvin Miller, Ted Simmons, and Larry Walker will have to wait a little bit longer to be honored. It had been scheduled for July 25th in Cooperstown, New York. It will take place outdoors in front of limited crowds as coronavirus restrictions ease. Former Red Sox slugger David Ortiz underwent surgery Wednesday for two stomach hernias, which were the product of his injuries from that attack he suffered 2 years ago in Santo Domingo. The Dodgers and the Pirates, the score was tied top of the third inning.
Here's the 2-1, now swinging a high fly ball to left, down the line where there's not a lot of room for Tom. He's running out of room, he leaps, it's gone. Off of his glove as he leapt for it, it's another home run for Justin Turner, his second tonight. And the Dodgers lead 2-1.
And that was all the scoring in the game. The Dodgers win 2-1, that from the Pirates Radio Network. Nationals and Rays, top of the 11th, this happened.
Here's the pitch to Starlin Castro, belted to left, down the line, toward the corner, and off the wall and in play. Mercer around third's coming in to score. The throw to second, the slide, the tag. It's not in time. And the Nationals are back in front. It's Washington 8 and Tampa Bay 7.
And Washington would win 9-7. That from the Nationals Radio Network. The Phillies and the Braves and rookie Luke Williams had a great moment.
The 0-1 pitch. Swung on. Line left field. Pretty deep. Going back to Reddy. He looks up. It is gone! It's a walk-off home run! The first homer in the career of Luke Williams! An amazing moment in an amazing week in the life of Luke Williams! In his second major league game, he has won it with a walk-off home run, the first of his career! And the Phillies have beaten the Braves 2-1.
That from 94 WIP. Earlier in the day, the Cubs and the Padres. And Jock Peterson came to the plate against former Cub Yu Darvish.
That ball is drilled. Peterson puts a charge into that one. Way back, forget it, gone. Home run, Jock Peterson unloads on Yu Darvish. And just like that, we're even. 1-1 for Peterson, his seventh of the year, as he takes Darvish deep.
That was a legend, Boog Shambi, on the Cubs television network. Now, before we get to Sarah Langs and to Ken Davidoff and to Cedric Mullins of the Baltimore Orioles, who joins us to talk about a significant change in his career, and my brother, I want to tell you, if you're looking for world-class soccer, ESPN Plus is where to find it. The best teams, the biggest stars, and over 20 international leagues and tournaments, including full coverage of the European Football Championship, streaming exclusively on ESPN Plus. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus Chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Ken Davidoff is a baseball columnist for the New York Post, and it was Ken who asked the question to Gerrit Cole the other day that led to the ultimate pregnant pause. Ken, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Buster. How about you?
I'm doing great. Look, before we get to all that, what happened in that Zoom interview the other day, you saw what happened last night in Minnesota. Gerrit Cole striking out Josh Donaldson in his first two plate appearances, and then certainly in the first one, kind of staring him down. What did you make of all that?
Oh, it was terrific. Well, look, Buster, I'm a baseball agnostic in terms of the morality of it all, right? Like, ultimately, I don't lose any sleep whether these guys, you know, use spider tack or pelican grip. It's all entertainment. So for Donaldson to lodge the allegation right before he faces Cole and then the call to strike him out and stare it down, it was fantastic.
And were you just, I'm curious about how you felt that Gerrit was going to react last night, having gotten a feel for him a little bit the last couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, if you had had me on 24 hours ago, I would have said, all right, I would have said 60% that he pitches like he did, you know, but I thought there was a decent chance he would crater a little bit. But so I wasn't that sure that he would respond as strongly as he did.
I thought there was no chance. You know, a question being thrown around yesterday was whether or not he was going to throw at Donaldson. I'm like, nah, that's not character personality.
No, not at all.
Yep. All right, let's get to what happened on the Zoom call the other day with you. I'm curious about, because you go into that, obviously it's not the way it is when we're in clubhouses and you have more time and, you know, it's a little bit more of a relaxed atmosphere. You don't even know going into the Zoom interviews if you're actually going to get called. Sort of what was your thought process with the question that you asked and how you asked it?
Yeah, Buster. So for me, the minute Josh Donaldson spoke out, what, about a week ago now, right? A little less, mentioning Cole by name. Like, all right, now we got a situation here. And the Yankees made it clear that, all right, Gerrit will talk the day before he starts, as is his custom. Like, all right, this is going to be an inquisition. Like, for my, that's how I approached that. I anticipated that all the questions would be about this, and all but one were. I think I went third in the sequence, and I just felt like the question had to be asked. I did not think it would go viral as it did. I thought, quite honestly, I thought he would have a better answer prepared, and I was surprised how thrown off he seemed to be by the question. I hope I asked the question in a respectful way. I certainly was not looking to get Gerrit Cole. I like Gerrit Cole. I respect the heck out of him. So, yeah, the fact that this took on the light that it did, I certainly didn't go into that expecting that.
You know, it's funny because in television radio, one of the questions you shouldn't ask most of the time is a yes or no question. Right. But right. In your case, it was absolutely with the question you were going to ask. It was the perfect question to ask. I want to get your thoughts on how you did that.
Thank you. I mean, Buster, you and I have known each other a long time. I tend to be a very direct person, whether I'm asking a question or giving an answer. And I'm an economy of words guy. So, yeah, I just thought that was, you know, I asked another question first, which is a little more around the bend about, you know, the spin, you know, how much do you look at your spin rates after a start? It was, you know, the spin rates had dropped in its prior start against Tampa Bay. But then I said, all right, well, let me just ask him this question. But I certainly did have in mind, let me just ask him a simple yes or no question.
Was there any backstory from the Yankees, from Gerrit Cole, in regards to you after that interview ended?
There was none. I have not heard a word from the Yankees. I covered the game. I'm using quote marks in 2021 style. I was not in Minnesota. I was in New York, watched it on TV and did the post games. And yeah, they called on me as they always do. But I asked Boone a question. I asked Gary Sanchez a question, maybe Gardner too. So yeah, all has been normal on my end.
Yeah, and I was I listened to a couple of radio shows yesterday when they were saying that, well, Gerrit Cole will react the next time he sees Ken. You know, he probably will have some things to say. I don't think he will. I think he's a total pro. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. Look, I, Buster, this is real. I miss those clubhouse interactions because, yeah, absolutely. In normal times, I'd like to just go up to him, like, you know, make eye contact, knowing we good here. And yeah, if he has some things to say to me, I'll listen, of course. Again, I like Garrett. I hope this doesn't impact the relationship, but if it does, I'll own it.
What do you make of baseball's unusual plan to be aggressive in checking for foreign substances in the middle of the year?
Yeah, I'm in favor of it. Look, Buster, you know, you and I have both been covering this game for a long time. And like, you know, this was just part of the furniture for a long time, you know, pine tar and sunscreen. And like anything, whether we're talking about steroids, whether we're talking about analytics, whether we're talking about weightlifting, sleep studies, things evolve, right? Like different components of the game evolve. So I'm not shocked that it has evolved to spider tack and pelican grip where, okay, now it's an unfair advantage. And baseball often is reactive rather than proactive. And now we get to this point where the game is clearly being impacted by these substances. So I support this. I'm sure there'll be some unintended consequences. I'm sure I'll be a little hairy at times. But yeah, if the result is a game with more action and fewer strikeouts, then I support it.
Yeah, we had a great note from Paul Imbicchetti, a researcher here at ESPN, yesterday that on breaking balls and sliders over 2,500 RPM, hitters batting average drops from 269 to 189. So I completely agree with you. It's clear, you know, that the increased spin rate through the use of foreign substances, you know, potentially has major impact on the game. Another response I had to the interview that you did, which, you know, a lot of the reaction, of course, was because of Garrett's response to your question, was I hope that as we go forward with this conversation, that everything is kept in proper context. You know, I feel like in the Hall of Fame voting every year, it makes me cringe when all the scrutiny is on Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, when you and I both know, like, this was an issue that involved hundreds and thousands of players in professional baseball. And I hate it when it lands just on two people. And I'd hate it if it would land only on Gerrit Cole here in the next few weeks.
For sure. For sure. And look, on one hand, I get it. You know, he is the $324 million man. He is the ace of the New York Yankees. There's going to be far more scrutiny and attention on him than, you know, middle reliever for the Arizona Diamondbacks or somebody. But yeah, it is unbelievably unfair to make him, you know, the poster child, if you will, for this issue when it is undoubtedly so widespread.
All right. So you heard what Pete Alonso said yesterday. I want to give you a couple reactions that I had to what he said. First off, if there was a conspiracy in 2019 to hurt the pitcher class of free agents, it failed miserably.
Yes, it did.
Because Garrett got $324 million. Strasburg got $245 million, obliterating all the records. And I also feel like that, you know, the Major League Baseball, I know they're not organized enough to pull off you know, some sort of a conspiracy like that. You know, I think about, for example, how instant replay is handled. For me, the overriding point after I heard Pete was, man, the relationship between the Player Association and Major League Baseball is so bad and so distrustful. What was your reaction?
Yeah, Pete Alonso, obviously, he's only been around a few years. Oh, my, I am so fond of him. Yep. I love his candor, his energy, his enthusiasm. Even during the pandemic, he did all these incredible things to help people. And on the social justice front, too, he was remarkable. So when I heard that yesterday, I cringed a little bit, like, really, Pete? Really? I was laughing. I was talking with someone like, what about the year that Carl Crawford made the most money in the free agent? Like, they try to suppress triples that year? Like, how did that work? I'm not ready to buy into Pete's conspiracy theory, but you nailed it. I mean, the relationship between the players and the owners is so terrible, and there should be so much concern when this base agreement ends after this year.
All right, sir. Well, congratulations. Asking the question that went viral the other day. Way to go.
Thanks, Buster.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Cedric Mullins, the leadoff hitter and center fielder for the Baltimore Orioles, having a huge season with an on-base percentage near 400 and recently had a burst of hits in 9 straight at-bats. Cedric, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Doing all right?
Oh, I'm doing great. And it's been so much fun to watch you, you know, to see the highlights of your play this year. And I got to believe that during the course of this season, you've gotten some really great compliments from peers. And so I'm curious about, you know, whether it's conversations with a first baseman or with an umpire or, you know, an opposing pitcher you run across. What are some of the things you've heard from those guys?
I think the main thing I've heard is just continue to swing it. Like, whatever I've been doing, you know, continue on that path and, you know, I've been seeing really good results from that. So it's just a matter of staying consistent.
What you remember anything specific that a player said to you that stuck with you, you know, especially someone who's older who you've gotten to know?
I know one of the first base coaches recently had said and asked me, do I ever get tired? You know, of course I do, but, you know, I'm working hard for that off day.
Now, I was talking with your former manager, Buck Showalter, about you. And, you know, I just asked him, I said, hey, as he developed, what do you think was really important? And he talked about the decision that was made to stop switch hitting. He said that was a really important part of your development. It's sort of take us through that if you can about, first off, when did you start switch hitting?
So I started switch hitting in games my senior year of high school, but I had a couple of years prior to that where I was kind of messing around with it. You know, I knew I felt like I had the potential to be one. Just a matter of seeing the pitching. And I know in high school, you know, it is you know, all through the levels, you don't really see that many left-handed pitchers. So it was just kind of tough to get the true amount of reps in that I needed to, you know, truly get a grasp for it. And it really showed itself when I had gotten drafted. It needed a lot of work. It needed a lot of catching up to do. And at some times it would show that progress, and at other times it didn't at all. And, you know, it was a matter of finding what would create the consistency, and dropping it all together, you know, seemed to be the move.
And what was the reason behind that? Did you feel like, you know, I know, you know, conversations with guys like Eddie Murray, you know, the greatest switch hitters of all time, they talk about how sometimes it can be difficult to maintain a swing from both sides of the plate because of the amount of work that's required.
Yeah, if I were to go through a normal day of me switch hitting, it'd basically be me trying to take twice as many reps right-handed than left. And so I was putting more attention on my weaker side. But during batting practice, you're not necessarily able to do that. You have the same amount of rounds as everyone else, same amount of reps. So you're trying to break down, you know, if a lefty was starting that day, I take more rounds on my right side, knowing that I was going to face a lefty, and then I might have a couple on the back end left-handed because that was my more natural side. But just trying to maintain that consistency and then also have your natural swing at its peak at the same time made it difficult. And so, you know, me having that experience, I feel for any switch hitter who, you know, is having struggles on one end or the other, knowing that they do have the capability to be successful on both sides. But for me, it just wasn't the route I needed to take.
So how do you think that benefited you as a hitter directly, the moment that you start doing it? How did it help?
You know, trying to create angles during the off season to kind of replicate different left-handed pitchers, guys that might be submarine, three-quarter arm sleeves, or arm angles. Just getting the feel for that again with some velo, you know, helped me for sure, helped me stay in the box a little longer. And then I started working on seeing what an off-speed pitch looked like, curveball, slider. And so I would try to, you know, kind of crank it up to what would basically be an abnormal curveball, something with ridiculous spin that I'd be able to stay on longer off the machine. And I feel like that translated into seeing a live arm a lot easier because I was able to time a person a lot easier than I would a machine. And it just helped everything flow smoothly. And I was able to, over time, get a feel for where the strike zone was coming from a left-handed pitcher. And you know, it's been working out really well.
Buck said that a center field predecessor to you was a big influence for you as a young player in Adam Jones. Tell me about what you learned from Adam.
I'd say one of the biggest things I learned from Jonesy was his consistency during his preparation. I think his preparation created the confidence that he needed to go out every day to compete at the highest level, and it showed, you know, great career numbers and, you know, someone I looked up to when I first got drafted. He just seemed to have everything put together, you know, whether it be on the field, off the field, you know, doing community work. So I'm, you know, trying to create my own path while following his footsteps. And I think I'm doing a pretty good job so far.
Tell me about his sense of humor, being a mentor to you, because I've always thought that was one of the underrated parts of him.
Yes. So he's a very outgoing, outspoken person. And I was always the, not the shut in, but really to myself, quiet. And, you know, he would just come out of nowhere and just crack a joke. And, you know, I'm told that I'm funny when the timing is right. So when he'd set me up for something, I'd be able to, you know, get a laugh out of him as well. So it was a really good camaraderie between us. And you know, I'm still in contact with him to this day and, you know, seeing how he's doing and vice versa. And it's been awesome.
Now, you know that making it to the big leagues is such a difficult task, such a low percentage of guys who are drafted actually make it to the big leagues, and a really low percentage, once you get past the first three rounds, make it. You were a 13th-round pick, and I'm curious, the day you were drafted, what your self-perception was as a player. When you hear, you know, you're drafted in the 13th round, are you like, oh, yeah, I'm going to show them? Or was it, boy, I got a lot to do?
Yeah, I didn't really feel as if I knew I had something to prove. I think everyone that gets drafted has something to prove. It feels as if you're on the same plan level, because when most guys get drafted, they either go to rookie ball or short season A, and we all have to start somewhere. And so having that kind of feel, you know, it took a lot of pressure off of me, and I knew that, you know, I had to come in and just do what I do, create a routine that worked for me. Because it is a lot different playing every day. You know, your body kind of wears down a little quicker than you would when you have, you know, a couple of days off between the week, every single week, to kind of gather yourself for games in college and high school. So, you know, finding a routine early that worked, that was successful, that would help lead to future success was, you know, pretty important to me coming out of the draft.
Buck said that one of the consistent things that was very apparent about you was your work ethic and how hard you play. And that's something I love watching you play because of that. Where do you think that comes from? Like, you know, in your upbringing and your experience as you're coming through and learning baseball?
I think just a pure love for the game is a big part of it. I think the coaches that I had coming up as a player, especially at a young age, played a huge part. They were the type of guys where, you know, if they were see you walking on the field for any reason, they'd get in you real quick and probably make you run a lap or, you know, do give them 50 push-ups, just something crazy, just to drill into you that, you know, when you're on the field, you take pride of being on the field because not everybody has the opportunity. And it really showed more and more as I progressed as a player, and it was almost like a funnel where, you know, guys weren't coming out of high school, going to college. It took a little more to make it to the next level, regardless of what school you went to. And that funnel just kept getting smaller and smaller. And I realized that the work I was putting in was helping distinguish myself amongst others. And I knew the effort level was showing that as well.
What was a learning moment along those lines for you where after the fact or in the moment you realized, geez, I didn't go as hard as I should have in that spot, and I'm not going to let that happen again? Whether it was when you were in high school or, you know, college or sometime in pro ball.
There are moments in high school and college where I felt that way, but it didn't really hit me as hard until pro ball, you know, where year after year, there's always a guy trying to come after your spot. You know, they're going to give it their all to do so. And so it's a matter of, you know, staying consistent on the field. And, you know, the year that I had back in 2019 was probably the rudest awakening I've ever had as a player, just the amount of struggle that I experienced. And so it was a matter of, for one, not letting my confidence completely dwindle from that point, but just kind of taking a step back, reassessing where I'm at right now, what adjustments I need to make, and progressing forward from there.
You play in an era in which there's not a lot of bunting, and you are an excellent bunter. How do you hone that skill? Juan Pierre, who used to be one of the best bunters of his generation, used to go out at 1:30 every day and bunt. How do you hone it?
It's no different than Juan Pierre's approach. It's no different than hitting. I feel like the more you work on it, the better you get. And when I have that opportunity, you know, there's a lot of guys doing a lot of things with early work, but when I create some time to get the work in, get a feel for how my angles are, how well I'm deadening the ball, and it translates to the game. You start to create a rhythm, and then all of a sudden you just become a really good bunter. But it didn't come out of nowhere. It came from preparing to lay it down a bunt and having the confidence to lay down a bunt when the opportunity comes.
All right, last one for you. What would it mean for you to be lined up along the baseline in Colorado for the All-Star game and hear your name called?
It'd be awesome. Like, there aren't too many other words to describe the feeling that I would have. It's something that, you know, as a kid growing up, I watched every year. So just seeing guys line up in the All-Star game, getting to see guys from across the league, they're having fun, they're having a good time. You know, just loving the game of baseball. You know, it's something that I, you know, do look forward to experience.
I'm sure we're going to see it. Cedric, thanks for your time. It was great to talk with you.
Thank you. You too. I appreciate it.
0096.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter and producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, I follow you on Twitter. So I think this has been firmly established. You love home runs.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love the home run derby, if that's where you're going, because that is always my favorite day of the year. You could search my tweets for the last like 6 years, every day, every morning of the derby. That's what I'm always tweeting. So I do.
So we're about a month away from the All-Star events and the home run derby. And so this is about the time. I know the conversations are happening within Major League Baseball about who should be in the derby. I think there is a potential for a tremendous field this year. Like, I'm so excited about the field, but because you know numbers better than I do, and you love home runs so much, I want to hear your grade eight, your field of eight that would make up this year's home run derby.
Absolutely. I mean, so as I said, I love the derby. I love home runs. I love all of this, and it's really hard to choose, but I think this is a great moment for StatCast numbers, because what we want to see is those crushed home runs, right? And those really, really long home runs. So I'm looking at a couple different StatCast leaderboards right now. And the first guy that just absolutely jumps off the page that I would have to have is Shohei Ohtani, because he leads everyone in the majors in barrel rate by 3 percentage points. And he's also a pitcher, and it's just incredible. We know all of these things, but he's an absolute definite. I thought Ronald Acuna Jr. put on a fun show last time around in 2019. I had pretty high hopes for him in that. You know, I'm looking at Joey Gallo.
Hold on, Sarah. Yeah. Just one quick thing. Just on Ohtani, look, he would be everybody's, I think, second choice. And I'll explain in just a bit. Second choice to be in the home run derby. But I'm curious, what's your gut feeling on whether or not he and the Angels would let it happen? Because my guess is, because the injury stuff and the fact that he's a pitcher and a hitter, My guess is it wouldn't happen. What do you think?
Yeah, I've sort of been seeing it as a pipe dream. You know, we put together a story on MLB.com, I think, when the move to Colorado was announced about our dream home run derby field then. And I didn't pick Ohtani then. I think I picked Vlad Jr., and I'll mention him in a minute. But it was mostly out of that realistic side. But I hope that we're both wrong, because it would be so much fun to watch him hit home runs, you know, into the Colorado night there.
There's no doubt. You mentioned Ronald Acuna Jr. What was so cool at him participating in 2019 in the Derby was you don't see guys do the Derby where they're spraying the ball all over the place. You know, Todd Frazier famously in Cincinnati, you know, he kept pulling balls to left field and taking advantage of the ballpark in Cincinnati. Lance Berkman did the same thing when he won the Derby. I think it was back in, 2004 in Houston. He took advantage of the Crawford boxes. He batted right-handed. I love the fact that when Acuna Jr. did it, he just hit the ball where it was pitched, and he was hitting bombs all over the place.
And that's what he does. And he's such a great home run hitter. I mean, he's in our top, you know, however many we have right now, top three, top four. He's been right around there for the last month and a half, pretty much the entire season. And that's what makes him so much fun to watch. So I think he's a fun guy. And all of these, I just think they hit the ball really hard. And I think that really, that just makes for those incredible derby home runs, because we know the ball is going to go far in Colorado, regardless of what else is going on. But when you're crushing it, I mean, he hit a ball 116 miles an hour the other night for a home run. So if he's doing that in a home run derby setting, we're going to be very entertained.
All right. Give me your third one.
Okay. Well, I mentioned I picked Vlad Jr. when we did a story a couple months ago. So he's an obvious one. He put on such a show. He set a record for home runs in a single derby in the last home run derby. He just didn't win it. He lost to Pete Alonso in the final, right? But the total number of home runs he hit in the second round and all of that was absolutely incredible. And that was really fun, because that was the moment where we knew this is what Vlad Jr. could be. And I know it's a home run derby, but we got to see what that swing can look like. And now we're seeing it happen in an AL MVP pace this year. So would love to see him come back and try to win that.
I agree. I'll never forget, you know, going to that home run derby, I heard about grumbling from some veteran players because Vlad only had like 8 home runs at that time. And the feeling was, well, why should that's this guy be in the derby? And then when you heard the sound of the ball coming off the bat, you're like, okay, that's why. All right. Give me your number four.
You know who's a guy who I'm not sure most people would say? What about Matt Olson? He hits these absolutely skied home runs for the A's. He's a big, you know, he'll hit a 40-degree launch angle home run, which is an absolute moonshot. And I'm really thinking about that outfield in Colorado right now. And, I mean, he would be hitting it into the third deck if he were playing there consistently. So I feel like with some batting practice pitches, that's what he could be reaching. And he's another guy in that sort of top 20 in barrel rate. So I'd love to see him there.
Give me your number five.
Did I say Pete Alonso yet? I mean, I think he's already said that he wants to defend his crown. So definitely, you know, he's absolutely on the list. And Pete Alonso was like the perfect home run derby participant in so many ways. It felt like back in 2019, obviously he was en route to setting what would be the rookie home run record, but it just felt so perfect for him in so many ways. I think personality wise, he was so into it, the belt, the whole thing, it all fit him so well. So absolutely would love to see him come back and do that again.
100%. I've got him as my number one because he would be the defending champion. He had so much fun with it. He basically said to me in the past that he would do it as long as he could. Like, yeah. You know, a lot of times I remember Aaron Judge did it once, he won it, and then he's like, okay, I'm done. Pete Alonso, I think, would want to do it, you know, every time. Give me your number six.
What about Rafael Devers? I mean, he's having a great power season this year. He's fourth in the majors in barrel rate. He really crushes the ball. I think he'd be a fun one in there as well. Again, I'm really just thinking about guys who hit the ball hard, because we know it's going to go far no matter what in Colorado. But Rafi Devers having a really great comeback season for the Red Sox after having a bit of a down year last year, and it's been all about power for him.
Number seven.
Number seven. I mean, can we get like Nelson? I know Nelson Cruz. I know he's older in there, but maybe one of his last chances to be there. I would love to see that. I mean, a guy who's just been consistently hitting home runs for us in this game for so long now. I would love to see him do that.
Number eight, your last one.
Boy, I feel like I have to pick a wild card, somebody nobody else is going to pick. But you know who's coming to mind? I don't think he's a wild card, is Javi Baez. And I think we saw him participate. That was in D.C., right, in 2018. We had him there. And that was a really fun one. I remember an interview that they did with him on the broadcast and everything, that I think he came and sat down with Carl and Tex. But he's a fun home run hitter. I think he's having the type of season that's his best season, where he's hitting for a lot of power, doing his typical, not walking much, swinging a lot. But he swings all the time. And, you know, in this derby format, I think that swinging a lot can really help you. And he's very adept at that and knows how to make that work for him. So I think that could be a really fun addition. Who did I miss? Who's like the obvious guy who I skipped?
Fernando Tatis Jr.
Oh, my gosh. I forgot an obvious one.
I'm going to say Jesse Winker to placate Redskins, who I offended earlier this week. I'm going to say Juan Soto. And I also think Ryan McMahon would be a good one because he's a Rocky. It's in Colorado. He would be number eight. How do you feel about my eight?
I love those. I think those are better than some of mine. So I think we should go with that. And I will say that I was trying to get people thinking about some guys that maybe they wouldn't have thought of otherwise. But Tatis is an obvious one. That was a big miss by me. And I think anyone who listens to this podcast knows that I will pick Juan Soto for absolutely anything. He homered last night. So would really love to see that. You know, I still think he's the best hitter in baseball. And certainly Jesse Winker. I mean, get another three homer game on the board and then some with a home run derby total.
All right, Sarah. Well, thanks for doing this. I knew you'd come up with a great list.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bleacher Tweets.
So for Bleacher Tweets today, we have a special guest because of all the questions about bears and Taylor's handling of the bear sighting the other day when a bear went into his trash can and he went out just in case he ran across said bear. Sam Lincoln, my little brother is a Vermonter, and I've always thought future governor of the state. He's a farmer. He's a logger. Makes his living in the woods. In fact, he's in the woods right now. And for the purposes of the conversation this week, he has some idea of what to do if you spot a bear. Sam, thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
So tell me, you're in the woods today. What are you doing?
I am engineering the transfer of woody fibers material from the forest to consumers right now. Cutting trees and making logs.
Very nice. All right. So have you actually seen a bear in the wild? I'm curious about that.
Absolutely. There's black bears everywhere in hell's Vermont.
So when you, I related to you in a text message this morning that when Taylor, after seeing that a bear had ripped into his trash can and Taylor went out to deal with that, he put on, what'd you say, Taylor? Your slip-on shoes and you were carrying a snow shovel, right?
That's correct.
And Taylor's thought was, he said it was about 50-50. The reason why he brought the snow shovel was in case he ran across said bears. So given your experience, Sam, how would you assess that approach?
Textbook maneuver, for sure. Yes. Was it red or blue snow shovel?
It was a blue snow shovel. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Should have gone red.
Red is good. Snow shovel plastic is undigestible by bears, and usually that gives the first responders a place to start looking for your DNA. But you know, next time, go for the red.
All right.
What would you recommend the average person do if they were to come across a bear in a situation like that, Sam?
I think, you know, there's lots of urban legends out there, but you know, standing still, making yourself appear as large as possible, which, you know, snow shovel is certainly a way to frighten them. But quite often they are going to be more scared of you than you are of them in the natural hierarchy.
So what happened when you came across bears? What did you do?
Well, and I don't usually carry a snow shovel in the woods as a first line of first defense. But I, you know, most of the time when I see a bear, it's usually moving away. It's going the other direction. I have probably startled it, feeding on some berries in the woods or things like that. Usually I'm not going in the same, I'm going to not go in the same direction as the bear. Switching directions is a good strategy.
Nice. We had Jeff Passan, another baseball writer, on the podcast earlier in the week, and he mentioned that he heard when he was little, I think, that the way to do with Bears is to run downhill because Bears struggle with that. And then he acknowledged that he had done some research and found that that was not true, correct?
I believe that is one of the prevalent urban legends out there. I am not going to try and outrun a bear. As they say, I'm going to try and outrun whoever's around me. So.
Exactly. All right. Before you go, I know your baseball knowledge is incredibly deep. What do you think of the Red Sox this season?
They're doing great. They're really strong. things are going well. I'm certain of it.
Yeah. Okay.
It's always what's that thing in the middle? The All-Star game. I think they're really going to do really well after the All-Star game. That's the thing that happens in the middle, right?
Yeah. Truth be told, how many Red Sox games have you watched from beginning to end this year?
None, I think. I'm pretty sure it's zero.
Yeah, that's pretty sure. Like, that's a number for your whole life.
can I ask a quick question here? Sam,
yeah, go ahead.
Fire away.
Sam, is Buster, and I've only learned this term from Buster just by working with him, but is he the textbook definition of a flatlander?
No. He's not a textbook flatlander. No. He still holds some of his rural roots tightly, which is keeping him from slipping into that other category in the matrix of Vermonter versus flatlander.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and how would you describe a flatlander, Sam, being a Vermonter?
Somebody who, when they're off the road in a snowstorm or in the mud, they don't get out and hook the chain when you stop and offer to pull them out with your truck.
It's very specific. Sounds like me.
or another right. definition, I think, would when deer season rolls around and a guy rolls up and said, "Hey, check out the deer I killed," and it's a cow. That's probably a flatlander. Yes.
Yep. That's definitely on the top five. Top five there. And if it's a black and white cow, not a brown one. So.
My goodness! All right, Sam. Thanks for doing this.
All right. Thank you. Good luck with the bear deterrence. Let me know how it works out.
Appreciate it, Sam.
All right. Have a good day.
Thanks, Sam. So, Taylor, you said to me before we did this, you didn't know what a Vermont accent sounds like. Now you do, I think.
Yes, absolutely. And that's a Vermont accent that sounds like it go all the way to the governor's office.
There's no doubt about it. Yeah. And truth be told, Sam and my two other siblings, they all hate baseball and none of them pay attention all the time. Sam has people who come up to him knowing that we're brothers and ask him, "Hey, what do you think about the Red Sox? What do you think about this?" He's like, "I have no idea."
As if he's learning
it. Last Bleacher Tweets of the day, Justin Simmons asked, "You said that Mike Rizzo, general manager of the Nationals, wouldn't hesitate to trade Max Scherzer within the division. Would other GMs, the National League East, be leery of sending prospects that might provide future production to a division rival for just a few months of Scherzer?" No, I think if someone was in that situation, Scherzer was available, and I am thinking about the Mets in particular, they're trying to win, and Max Scherzer would help them win. So I don't think that would be a factor. Remember, keep sending in your Bleacher Tweets. That's it for today. My thanks to Sam Lincoln, my little brother, Sarah Lang, Cedric Mullins, Ken Davidoff, and to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.